You know, but I am in a sick country. The entire country is sick. We met a postie the other day working on Sunday, and we said, "Why are you working on Sunday?" He said, "We've got 60 posties, 40 of them are homesick." We are not the healthy country anymore. We are a sick country, a sick, silent country. Basically, it's like we're apprentice communists. You don't talk about anything that matters, and you just live an inconsequential life. That's what's happening in Australia at the moment. I'm a part of the freedom movement, and we are growing. We're like a brush fire. There's all these people doing all these different things, and there is an awakening, but we have in our national anthem, it says we're girt by sea. Well, we're not girt by sea, we're girt by zombies. We literally have a huge herd of cowards who just don't want to deal with what is coming from. They've just pushed through the digital ID. Every store is trying to go cashless, and they want to bring in a social credit score system, which will be slavery. And they know it, and they just say, "What can I do about it?" So they do nothing.
Hello, it's Clive DeCarle, another edition of the Health Revolution, and today I am joined by Michael Gray Griffith, who is an activist in Australia who's been doing, by the sounds of it, really fantastic work waking up Australians, and there are not many of them, as we know, it's a big place, not many people, so you're going to succeed immediately. So, Michael, tell us about what you've been doing.
Well, I was one of Australia's only independent playwrights. So I had my own theatre company, and we were paying our actors equity rates. We were very happy. We weren't making millions, but the army was touring one of our plays, a suicide prevention play. We had other plays going on, and I was the writer and director, and we were just traveling town to town, putting on the plays wherever we could. Very, very happy. Then COVID hit and shut us down. And then when it finally opened again, I was in Melbourne. When they finally opened again, they made an announcement that theatres would be segregated. And I made an announcement on Facebook that my theatre company will never play to segregated audiences because segregation is a cancer of the culture's soul and I won't participate in that. So I was cancelled. And this very same day, I thought, well, I'm 56, I think then, or 55, and now I'm unemployed. And so, what am I going to do? And so, I could see that freedom of speech was under attack, and I am an advocate for freedom of speech. So I set up this podcast for my podcast called Cafe Lockdown, where I just invited anyone on to talk about anything. But basically, they just wanted to talk about the rise of tyranny and defend free speech by exercising free speech. I then ended up being a speaker and a big part of the Melbourne struggles. I was shot by a rubber bullet, pepper sprayed. I was arrested at the Shrine of Remembrance after getting my head kicked in. Then I ended up in Canberra, where we had 1 million people came to Canberra to a camp called EPIC. From all around Australia. It was the most extraordinary protest in Australia's history. And when I was there, I noticed that no one cared. The mainstream media were lying, saying no one was there, and there was about 1 million people there. And so I picked up my phone and I started shoving it in people's faces and said, "Who are you? What are you doing in Canberra?" And I was trying to show the world, because the government and mainstream media were betraying us as right-wing Nazi fascists. And so I thought if I do unedited interviews with people, I would allow the other people to see that, no, we are not how we portray to be. We are just critically thinking Australians who are very concerned that our lucky country is being taken over by an ideology which is going to end up in some form of totalitarianism. And after I left Canberra, I was coming back. I was in this little four-cylinder truck that had jab injuries on the back and the mandates. And we came to a little country town, and all these people came out wanting to be interviewed. And so I said to my colleague, a Polish guy, I think we could go around Australia town to town, because at that stage, we were so in the dark that we only ever really heard from people in Melbourne and Sydney, Brisbane, and the whole vastness of Australia was just like silent. And so the borders were closed, like the WA border was closed. You could not cross it. And so we thought, well, let's cross it. So we got arrested crossing that as unvaccinated people, which was a bit scary, but we got arrested there. And then after that, we kept going town to town, and we'd turn up in a town, we'd set up ourselves, and says, anyone wants to talk, we'll record you. And so it began. So I sort of lost my dream, which was to be a playwright, which was something I've been wanting to for a long time. So I lost that dream, and I stumbled into a destiny, and that's how my life has been ever since. So I do these shows. I do Sunday to Wednesday, and then I now the podcast now has about seven streamers, and the streaming, the people like myself who interview people or just want to speak about what's happening, and that's Cafe Lockdown. And then during the day, like today, I was at a town called Wangaratta, where Sharon here, who's very brave, another brave freedom fighter, she was planting a thing called the Forest of the Fallen, which is bamboo poles. And on the top is an A4 piece of paper with the story of someone who's been injured or killed by the jabs. And we plant them there like a shrine, put down the people. And what I do is I interview people who turn up or people who are putting it up just so we're capturing them. I don't think I'm waking anyone up anymore. It's more that if you are awake and you're feeling like you're going insane, our show, because we talk openly about anything, we help keep you sane. I think waking up is basically a personal journey, and you're going to wake up at your own time. But if you do wake up and you are trying to find, is there anyone else like me? Well, I'm a part of a glorious tribe in Australia called the Freedom Movement. We argue a lot. We don't agree on everything. And I kind of see us like, here's a mountain, and there's where we want to reach to at the top. And we're all climbing it from different ways. And I think at some point we'll meet as we get to the top, if we are not eradicated, which I think is also a possibility. Oh, I can't hear you. You've muted.
Sorry about that. If I were to ask you, what do you think the solutions are? If you put on your optimistic hat, what would need to
There's only
happen?
one solution.
Okay. Get rid of
Courage.
all of it.
Courage. That's the only solution. Fear is the real virus that's infected the world. When
Okay.
I traveled Australia, it was very clear to me that the first battle we lost was for our identity. We have shrines built to celebrate those who fought and died for our freedoms in the Great Wars. And we thought on them, there's a sign that says, lest we forget. Well, we forgot. We didn't just forget, we actively forgot, because what they said was, if you remember, you won't be able to go to a cafe and have a latte. And they wanted their lattes, so they threw away their freedom. And basically, fear got into our nations, became the navigator for our country for the last few years. It's now losing its grip because too many people are dying, and there's too many people sick, and they're realizing that something is dreadfully wrong. And I do think eventually they'll realize that listening or following fear will only lead them somewhere they don't want to go, and their grandchildren certainly don't want to go. And so bit by bit, I think people will find courage. And the beautiful thing about courage is you can be a coward all your life, and then one moment, one joyous moment, you can go, screw this, I'm going to decide to do something brave, which means doing something, even if you're frightened, just not listening to fear. And you can, with that one choice, change your life. And if enough people make it, then we can rescue our future.
Well, I agree. I mean, a lot of people don't even grasp the fact that fear has an opposite. The opposite of fear is love. And you're either in that state of consciousness, the state of love, or the state of fear, but you can't be in both at the same time. And in the state of love, everything's possible. You know, there's the old saying, fear says, I'll keep you safe, and love says, you are safe.
Yeah, I think we're born with those two. They're like parents. I think we're born with those two, where we, from a child, you can be frightened even as a baby, and you also know love, because if you smile at your parents, they're going to feed you.
But
so
you can switch from one to the other in a moment.
It's a choice. As you go through life, you have to, you, every single moment of your life, you can make a choice to which master you're going to follow. And my thing about fear, because I used to be more frightened as a younger man, until I realized once I was in an abusive relationship with myself, and I basically asked myself as though fear was a twin, a Siamese twin. I've given you so much time. What have you given me? And the answer was nothing. And so that's when I decided, if I wanted to do something and a part of my brain said, no, no, you shouldn't do that, then I did it belligerently. And that's become, that's the new way that I've been living my life for a long time.
Yeah, very good. So just back to my previous question, let's say you've now found your courage, and everybody has huge amounts of courage. Yeah, I mean, I found myself as when I've had a couple of moments where I've been attacked, you know, physically. And in those moments, I go from being absolute passive to a raging monster. And it's not me that changes, it comes on. And I think most people can take on their warrior persona in a microsecond if they need to.
100% agree. Yeah, and that there's hope in that. It's like, you know, the Berlin Wall came down, not gradually, suddenly something sparked and courage, and before they knew it, the Berlin Wall had fallen. The same thing with the Arab Spring. One young man burnt himself to death, and before they knew it, most of the Arabic countries had revolution on their hands. So that is something. I've interviewed a lot of Romanians that tell me that there came a day where they're watching their Polish comrades fight with solidarity, and then one day the young people just said, give me liberty or give me death, and they went into the streets. And this woman said to me, that's the difference between a protest and a revolution. A protest, you go there and you know you're coming home. A revolution, you leave the house and you don't know whether you're coming home. But the thing is, you're only going to come home if you're free.
So we discussed off camera the idea of a political party or a non-political party that are setting up in England right now, where one town, one city votes on one issue only. That single issue is we're going to vote for local people who are brought up in this town, who are successful in this town in all these different professions, and they're going to run it, not corrupt politicians. I mean, do you see any route like that in Australia, which could be a trigger for people to go, this is crazy, we're slaves, we're having all our money stolen from us, you know, everything, you know. Is there something that might wake them up that you can see?
There are people setting up alternative communities now. That is happening. There's a lot happening like that. I do fear, though, that they could be biding time, and if what we think is going to happen does happen, then they'll probably come for them. What I think the beauty is of going back to that sort of way of living is that, see, in Australia, 60 years ago, if you went to a town, that town was different from that town. If you go to an Australian town now, every town's the same. There's all your corporations, Officeworks, hardware. You know, we have a huge chain called Bunnings. It's hardware stores. Bunnings, McDonald's, this. So every town looks the same. I think if you go back to governing yourself as a small little district, then you get to create a culture. So you go, oh, I love going to that town. Like in England, I mean, I grew up in Wales, but going to Cornwall is different from going to Edinburgh. You know what I mean? There's distinct differences. Even even in the accents and stuff like this, where, and so I think that is a great way to go. And I think humans would flourish in that environment more than they do in ours.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if we were given the choice to keep our own money, it would be incredible. You know, we could restart the economy tomorrow if we weren't
That's
taxed
right.
anymore. I mean, what right have they got to tax us? Because they just print money anyway.
That's right.
They keep us under control.
There's a lot of people in Australia who, I work with a lot of doctors who were deregistered because they question the narrative. I've worked with not just doctors, people from all different sort of demographics who've lost everything. They've been kicked out of society like lepers. And then they're suddenly going, well, what are we paying taxes for? You took our jobs off us. What are we paying for? What are we getting in return? You know, instead, the country, this is another interesting thing about Australia. We are sitting on an enormous mine. We have literally every mineral you could want beneath our feet. We're surrounded by this incredible ocean full of fish. You know, the world's hungry, we've got it. We've got farmlands that could literally feed China. So why do we have an enormous debt? Why are we broke? Norway taxes, I think it's oil companies correctly, and doesn't have any debt. It actually lends money to other countries. Where our country, we should be one of the richest countries in the world, and we kept telling we are, but there is so much debt here, it's incredible. And now you can't find anywhere to rent, the rents are too high, you can't afford a house, the petrol is through the roof, so traveling is harder because the petrol prices are insane. Power costs, basically the cost of living, everything. So everyone is just struggling, trying to survive. They don't have time to think. They don't have time to philosophize. They don't have time to just look and question. And then there's also the fear that keeps them quiet as well. And so they're not allowed to freely talk to each other. And talking freely, like we're doing now, is how we bring up problems. And you bring a solution, I bring a solution, we argue a bit, we find some common ground, and we move forward. And the reason Australia was such a prosperous country was in the past, if people turned up and built one of these outback towns, they didn't sit there like sheep waiting for the government to tell them what to do. They just, with entrepreneurial style and a larrikin attitude and courage, they did what had to be done and they built prosperous towns. Now people are basically, I actually don't call them sheep. There's a thing sheep. The best analogy I have now is chicken and seagulls. A lot of people like living in a chicken coop, and the farmer, the government, keeps them nice and safe and takes their eggs and this and this. And then there's another mob, which are seagulls, who like to survive on their wits and come in, are quite happy to interact, but they also love flying.
Yeah, that's a very, very good analogy. I like that. Yeah, excellent. I mean, over the many years, I've asked, when I meet somebody in the military, for example, or police, I'd say, well, look, mainly the military people I've asked, if the world paid you triple not to do what you're doing right now and go home and help your family, would pay you triple not to do war, because the only reason government can get away with what they do is they've got these paid thugs who are on so little money that they have to keep working because that's all they know, sort of thing. But could we not stop war and violence by just offering them triple to change their mind? Just pay them.
Hey, look, before I made it as a playwright, I used to do whatever jobs I could because I was a writer, and all I wanted to do was be an artist, and which means you have to do whatever job you comes along. And so I had young kids, and I scored a job driving trams, which was remarkable because I'm a terrible driver. I've actually got the record for going the wrong way because with a tram, you come up to, and one tram goes this way and one tram goes this way, and you've got to press the button to pick which route you're on. But I'd have a play in my head, and I'd be so in the play, I think I was a 48 and 109, and I'd take 300 people the wrong way. I had the world record for doing that. And they actually, the bosses actually called me in once. This is true. And I said, I'll get to your answer. They called me in once, and they said, we don't know what to do. We like you, but you've got one job and you can't do it. You just have to go the right way. And they said, before we basically sack you, and they had a huge folder of all my incidents, and the union said, we can't do anything. We like you too, but, you know, you can't do the job. And so they said to me, this boss said to me, and he was like a head kicker. So he come in, they're all sitting there, and I was given one last question. You know, if you have anything to say in your defense. So I sat there thinking, and so what I said, and I swear to God I said this, I said, you know what? I just finished writing my first musical. I wrote all the lyrics, all the melodies. I didn't do the music, got someone else to that. Wrote the whole thing, and it's finished. And I'm pretty sure if I could go the right way all the time, I couldn't write a musical. And the boss, the head kicker, looked at me stunned, and then he laughed his head off, and then he said, get the fuck out of here, Griffith. And I got off without penalty. And the union was like, how the hell? I don't know. So they just liked me. I mean, eventually I quit, but because the theater was getting successful enough that I knew I had to either follow my dreams or remain a chicken. I couldn't do both. So I had to choose whether I was a chicken or a seagull. And I thought, screw it. I'm here for one life. I'll be a seagull. But one thing that got me in a lot of trouble on the trams was I used to write poetry about the passengers, and they hated that. And then I got onto the ABC radio because they wanted me to read the poems out. And what I was saying was, on these trams is hope for the world, because Melbourne is the most successful multicultural city in the world, or it was. And you'd have the trams, you'd have Jews and Muslims and black people and white people and Asians, every race. And they weren't killing each other. They weren't fighting each other. They were just riding a tram. They'd set up for old people. They'd stand up to let old people sit down, or pregnant women. Didn't matter what race, what religion they were. Left alone, without the government pushing them into war, they just wanted to ride a tram and exist. And I used to somehow look back at the traffic lights and look at them. And I think you guys don't even realize how beautifully you glow. You're like, this is humanity glowing. You leave people alone. There's a book called Lord of the Flies, which says basically if you remove government and police, people just start killing each other. I actually 100% don't believe that. I actually think they sell that book to make us think that, so we want the authority. I actually believe the reason there's 8 billion people on the planet is because most of us know we get further together, and getting on in love gets us further than hate. In fact, we have to be taught to hate, which is what the government loves to do.
Yeah, when I was at school, they gave us Lord of the Flies to read when we were on it.
Yeah, now I'm thinking that was on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to go there.
Before, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So tell us more about your podcast. Where are people going to be able to find it?
Oh, we're on Fascist Book. Under Cafe Lockdown. We're going to think we've got 106,000 followers there, but we're not allowed to reach them because we can't stream to it. We can restream, but we can't live stream. So every night we go live in Melbourne time about 8 o'clock, and we go live during the week. And the reason we go live is people come on like a cafe and they're all chatting, all saying hello to each other. So it's a community. And then we just interview anyone we can, anyone we find. And we've interviewed, you know, like the McCulloughs and all those, which is great. But I love interviewing. There was one woman I interviewed recently, which was a beautiful interview. She was a cleaner, you know, come out of a domestic abuse situation, was a cleaner, was driving around Melbourne trying to avoid police so she could do a job during the lockdowns, and her courage and just hearing about. I have a belief that God is a scriptwriter and he loves his tragedies. He just loves them. Likes humor too, but he just loves his tragedies. So you meet these people and their lives are just full of tragedy. And they just try to make the best of it or keep going. And, you know, they you know, I meet them sometimes. A lot of people cry when we interview them in person because I'm looking at them straight in the eye for up to half an hour, and I'm really listening and I'm asking pertinent questions. And suddenly you break a dam that is in a lot of us of stored tears because we think no one gives a shit. But if you actually give them the amount of time, they cry and it's very cathartic. And so that's what I do. So you find us on Twitter, Instagram, Rumble is probably our safest. And it's just Cafe Locked Out. There's a lot of people scamming us with fake sites, but just look for this ugly mug, you'll find me. And that's all we do. We don't actually know what we do because we just make it up as we go along. But it's become what I do. And I do sort of well, I have written a new play that we're hoping to get up. We've got a plays. My ex-partner is trying to get our plays up again, but I feel there's a calling to this, and there's extraordinary moments. Like even last night, we turned up in this town, Wangaratta, at like 1 in the morning, because we had to be at this thing then, and I just couldn't sleep, and so I just got out and I went, and there was a little mound before me. And I walked over to the mound, and on the other side of the mound is a theater, an open air theater, all lit up. I felt like it was a gift. And there's a lot of spiritual stuff going on that is, it's ultra extraordinary, the things that are happening. We get astounded by these gifts. You know, like a little while ago, we were down completely broke, thinking, well, we're coming to the end. Because we have this like bank account figure, we reach that, we quit, and we're often inside of it. And then suddenly, this other guy high up in the movement, Michael O'Neill, Barbara O'Neill's husband, actually, he's passing through this town and he parks behind my bus. And then he goes for a walk. He doesn't know it's my bus. Then he comes back, he's about to drive off, and he looks up and he goes, "That's Cafe Locked Out." And then he comes up to me and he says, "How you going?" I say, "Michael, how you been? You know, it's coming like this." He actually gave me this band, Freedom Fighter, in the great Canberra epic thing. I've still worn it for years. Anyway, then he goes, "How are you going for your finances?" I go, "Oh, you know, okay." He goes, "Come on." He took me down to the bank and he gave us enough to go for another month. And he says, "Well, your work's important, so keep going." So I'm actually now surviving as an artist on the goodness of the people, but my art now isn't so much writing as the art of conversation and trying to defend free speech. And I capture ordinary Australians' stories and I don't edit them because it's like a historical record now. The mainstream media said everyone was happy and everyone was compliant. Well, I have thousands of interviews of people who don't agree with that. And they've gone through awful tragedy and have to make significant choices. And most of them feel, and this is the lesson I'm learning, most of them feel that they're the better for it. So I actually think COVID, eventually, if we don't go into tyranny, will be very good for Australia, because I think one of the lessons we learn, Big Pharma goes, "You've got a pain, we've got a pill." I actually think if you have emotional pain or whatever you're going through, that's a darkness you have to journey through. And there's always a dawn. And you can go through it, like you said, you with curing yourself. It might be a physical cancer you're curing or some sort of mental illness or anxiety. The only way to do it is to go through the darkness, go on that journey, and see where you end up. And I ended up here talking to you. And I wouldn't change it for the world for no amount of money. I feel extraordinarily blessed to capture the brave stories of my brothers and sisters. Extraordinarily blessed.
Well, fantastic. I mean, you know, what you found is following the outcome is more important than following the income.
It's the journey, yeah. It's the journey. And it's really interesting, you know, because I love critical thinking and our movement. This is the beauty about the Australian Freedom Movement. They're critical thinkers, and yet at the same time, they follow their instincts, which kind of doesn't make sense, but they do it. So when we had to this gathering in Canberra where people came from all around Australia and they're in this, I was saying to me, "Why are you here?" I don't know, I just had to come. It was like a spiritual awakening, a gathering of spiritual guardians. It was extraordinary. I wrote this thing once that on the time I was there, because Imagine an enormous field, like huge, huge, huge field, something like maybe the Queen would own. And in the morning, it was empty. In the evening, it was full. People were in the car 4 hours trying to wait to get in. The police were trying to stop us. They were overwhelmed. And in the evening, this huge space was like a refugee camp. And the Australians were there, had nothing, and they were going, everything they thought that mattered, all this material wealth, they'd left behind. And they were helping each other. They were getting on. It was joyous. Children were playing with each other, running around. It was incredible. And it, I think it profoundly moved the people who were there. And I wrote this thing that's saying, once in your life, if you are lucky, an event like this happens. It doesn't happen every generation. And if it happens in your generation, you're extraordinarily lucky that you're part of the generation where something like this happened. If you are exceptionally lucky, you are there. Because what happened that night, this one particular night, is that an incredibly rare flower bloomed. And the petals were the Australians. And the fragrance was freedom. And no matter where they are now, how tough time gets, that fragrance is imbued in their senses and their soul, and they will not give it up. Sorry, I keep sniffing. I'm a little bit cold. Yeah.
Vitamin C is what you need.
Yeah, I will. I'll get onto it right after my coffee.
If you want to send me your address, I'll send you a package over. So.
I'm homeless. I live in a bus. I've got no fixed address. That's another extraordinary thing. My life now, I wake up in the morning. Often if I park at night, we don't know where we are. We wake up and we're somewhere else. And the beauty of the bus, which is covered in freedom paraphernalia, is that the police leave us alone because they think the bus is parked. But it's actually a home on wheels. I'll give you Rahana's address. I'll get Rahana to send it through to you. But it's an incredibly beautiful way to live, because you realize technically you're homeless, but I never feel that I'm homeless, because the bus is my shelter, but Australia is my home. So wherever I am, I'm home because I'm Australian.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. As the seagull type, you'd obviously enjoy meeting new people and discovering new places.
Love it.
Yeah,
I love it. I love talking. And I think why they want to, because what they're doing over here now is really dangerous. They're not taking our freedoms. They're manipulating us to hand over our freedoms. We handed over all our guns after an awful event. We just did, yeah, take our guns. So now we don't have anything to defend ourselves against domestic threats. Then when COVID came, people were so frightened, they handed over their freedom of choice. They just got coerced to do something they didn't want to do. I've interviewed so many people said, I'd never wanted to took it. I wrote on the form, I don't want this. But they handed it over. Didn't get taken. They handed it over. Now they're after freedom of speech with the disinformation bill, which I believe you guys are copying. I think Scotland's already got it. Hate speech thing. They're going, yeah, we need to be safe. Here, take my freedom of speech. I'll remain silent. And what they're doing by that, which is terrifying to me, is that they're becoming Anne Frank, except the attic isn't physical. It's in their soul. And so they'll live in there and their children will live in there. And basically we could have a generation or two generations of people who no one ever knows who these people are, because like communism, they're living out of fear and in their soul, and they're not expanding and bringing who they are to the world. And I think that's what freedom is. Freedom is the freedom to be you. And that's what they want to take. They want us to groupthink. They want us to basically just suckle off the government. And the other thing, though, is that I think that's the greatest gift. And I think the greatest prayer you can give, if there is a creator, is to forge ahead through all your pain, all your faults, and find the best version of you. And if you can achieve that, then that's the greatest prayer you can give to your existence.
Yes, the freedom to be yourself and the freedom to be left alone.
Yeah. Someone told me once, this Polish woman, because I often ask people, what do you think freedom is? And she said, I'll tell you what freedom is. Freedom is leave me the fuck alone. And all the people from the Polish, all the people from the Eastern Bloc, that's their thing. Get out of my life. I love it.
So it strikes me that the next play you write should be a one-man show.
No, there's. I've actually written a play called Interview with an Apprentice God. It's a two-hander, so we will be doing two-hander plays. I've got that one, another one, but they'll have to be kind of underground plays, because if you want to write things about things that matter now, none of the theaters here, which are all woke, will take it, and you won't get any funding. So you're going to have to write plays that are probably about 40, 30 to 40 minutes long. That can go on anywhere, town hall, someone's backyard, anywhere. And I've written the first one of those. And I think that is the way forward, that people can just put them on themselves anywhere. And the plays shouldn't preach. The plays shouldn't be, because I don't think artists are leaders. Artists, true artists, are mirrors. They hold up a mirror to the society, think, this is what I think, where I think you are. Or like George Orwell, this is where I think you're going. Do you want to go there? And that it's art. It should be about getting needling people enough with questions that they come up with the answers themselves. And I think there's never been a more important time in my lifetime now than to be an artist of some description. Now is the time to create and be an artist and challenge everything that's going on in whatever form you can. I think the reason the woke culture is trying to control art is they know how dangerous art can be. And Oliver Anthony, with his song Richmond, North of Richmond, proved that. He's outselling Taylor Swift now. People are starving for the truth. And our bullshit meters are primed, because we've basically spent the last 3 years wading in a tsunami of bullshit.
Well, I agree. I choose to keep my optimistic hat on pretty much at all times, because otherwise it would be depressing to think what could be coming around the corner. But I still believe that there is the chance that something really shocking will happen, which wakes people up big time.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's happening. AstraZeneca has just been taken off the market over here. The comments are furious. People are angry. They're so furious. And so I think that's going to next. So I agree with you. But I'll tell you something beautiful. It was a poem I read. I wrote one to sort of emulate it, but I didn't write it as well as the English poet wrote. And I can't remember his name, but it was a poem about pit ponies. And what it was one night they had to do something in the mine, in the coal mine. I think they had to set off an explosion. So they brought the ponies up at nighttime, because they basically lived their life in the mine and they couldn't take the sun. So they bring them up at night and they leave them in a field. And then they do what they have to do in the mine. They try to get to go get there, so in the morning they can get the ponies back before the sun rises. And in this poem, it the poet who actually saw this said, all these ponies did all night was run. They ran all night. They just ran and ran and ran. And that is what I think will eventually happen with people. They'll go, no, I didn't come here to be a slave. And you're English. English weren't born to be slaves. In fact, they ended slavery. And Australians, we were not born to be slaves. And at some point, bit by bit, people will realize that. And they'll realize there's things, freedom, liberty, the freedom of being yourself will be more important than a bricked up house. That's just bricked up space. Eventually, they'll hunger for freedom, and it'll happen.
Well, great. Should we cut it there?
Sure.
That
Thank you
was.
for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great. No, I could talk to you for hours.
Oh, cheers. If I wasn't so tired, I'd talk, but.
Yeah, no, I understand. So.
What oh, this is this. This is the Light newspaper. This was started in Ireland, the Light newspaper in Ireland, but now there's Australians doing it.
Yeah, well, that's great. I used to write for the Light here in England for a year or so.
Wow, there you go.
Some years
Well,
back.
it's going across Australia now. If you want hope, people buy it. They freedom fighters buy like 100, and they put them all over towns. You go places; it's everywhere. So there's a lot of good stuff happening.
Have you met you, Darren? You know, Darren
Darren?
started the Light in the UK. Have you been given interviews with
No,
him?
I'd love to interview Darren.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I know the editors over here, no one knows who they are, but I've met them. He hasn't done an interview, but I'm mates with him. I really admire him. And but I'm not allowed to say who he is. But I would love to interview Darren. And even to say that his idea over here is one, there's three things over here that are doing amazingly. One of it is the Forest of the Fallen, of which Sharon here is a great planter. And so they plant these forests in the towns, and they basically, it's incredible. There's a symbol called 832. We put out a call for a symbol to unite the entire movement that is not actually a movement in itself. It's just something that unites us. I don't have anything on me now. Do you have an 832 thing on you? There's, yeah, Baz. Oh, it's on my computer. Anyway, so we had all these people, and the idea was you had to be. Oh, yeah, we've got a flag here. You had to be able to. So the flags. You had to actually be able to write it yourself on your neighbor's dirty windscreen. We had to be able to fit to a little square sticker so teenagers could have it in their pocket and stick it everywhere. And it had to be unique to our movement. We had lots of submissions. But the winning one was 832. And I don't read the Bible, but it's from the Bible, and it says the truth shall set you free. So we have it on caps and beanies, but it's mainly so we can identify ourselves like the hippies did. You could always, a hippie, they wore tie-dye, but we won't wear tie-dye. So it's trying to find a way that we can identify ourselves in the crowd. The other mob don't know what we're doing. What's 832? And we just say, Google it. Because if you tell them, they've got their shields up. But if they Google it, they're like, the shields are down because it's their friend, their lover, their phone. And that says the truth shall set you free. It's like a punch to the soul. It really works. And the other thing is the Light newspaper. I see people going around putting it everywhere. It is a beacon of hope in this country. So I would be honored to interview him.
Yeah, well,
yeah, sure.
You can probably get hold of him through your friend in Australia, but if you need his email, I can send it to you.
Yeah.
Would
I'll
like
reach out to him anyway. I'll get Rahana to do it. Yeah. But thanks. And I'm totally with you. I think I'm really learning. I never used to, but I'm really learning from people like yourself and Barbara Neal and others that. There we go.
Yeah, very good.
And that there's, yep, and it comes out every 6 weeks, like 200,000 copies every 6 weeks, go all around Australia, all funded by volunteers. But I will, I am of the belief now, I'm in awe of my body now, or our bodies, how incredible they are. And I think one of the crimes that has happened is that Big Pharma has literally convinced us that we're not a part of the natural world. We're like astronauts. And in order to live in this world, you've got to fill the veins, or you've got to take all their shit in order to survive here. You won't survive. We're actually realizing now that we've been duped, and our bodies are incredible. Our immune system is incredible. And I think if you like you break a leg or something like that, then obviously doctors and hospitals are great. But that's what I'm becoming a believer of. And I'm actually quite in awe of my body now, which is because it's old. When it was young and beautiful, I just disregarded it. Where now I'm actually in awe of the body. I think it's a collection of miracles. You got a question coming.
As you get older, it stops being, your body stops being an amusement park and starts to become a temple.